The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
The opinions expressed by the guests of this show do not necessarily express the opinions of Dr. Weinerman or Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Welcome to the Pain and Wellness Hour, sponsored by Weinerman Pain and Wellness, Philadelphia's premier rehabilitation, physical therapy, and chiropractic facility, located in the heart of Center City, Philadelphia. Here are your hosts, Joe Krause, Marla Vitarello, and Joe Dougherty.
All right, welcome to the Pain and Wellness Hour, sponsored by Weinerman Pain and Wellness, serious doctors for serious injuries. I'm Joe Dougherty with my co-host Marla Vitarella.
Good afternoon, everybody.
We're ecstatic to have Joe Cronin back in the studio.
Thank you very much.
It's always great to have Joe. And, of course, Dr. Albert Talone is going to be opening up the show. And we got Barbara Rocky, who's the executive director of Philiposh, who's going to be coming in at the end of the hour, talking about the Workers' Memorial event, which is an amazing, amazing event that is going to be going on the 27th of this month. So I think we got Dr. Talone on the line?
Yeah.
Hey, Doc.
I'm right here, Joe.
Listen.
Dr. T.
Marla, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So you're the leadoff hitter today, Doc. We want to you were going to talk about, what, seasonal allergies?
Yeah, we're going to pick up on that where we left off the last time. And what I wanted to tell you is, we didn't get a chance to mention it, but seasonal allergies are a result, reaction for some folks breathing the air this time of year in spring. It's amazing natural biologic phenomena that occurs every time this year. It's called pollination. And without pollination, life on this planet would be a lot different. And pollination allows for all the plants to flourish and make vegetables and fruits for us, which we harvest every year later on in the spring and throughout the summer.
Doc, are we behind the eight ball with the weather because of the...
Well, you know, we have very dramatic allergy seasons with pollination, because we have an interesting phenomena of lots of rain in April. Mm-hmm. And then plenty of sunshine throughout the season, and that makes for a very lush area. The Northeast is very lush, and we have heavy pollination. You don't realize it, but there's tons of pollen suspended in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, you can verify this very easy. Within the next few weeks, you can look at your car.
I was just going to say, right.
And you watch it had it clean, and you see this yellow-green dust-like material all over your outdoor mm-hmm. furniture and your polished car. And that, my friends, is pollen dropping from the atmosphere.
Right. Or you could just tune into 860, Doc, and listen to my voice, because my voice is a direct result of inhaling all the pollens. I just lose my voice every spring.
And in all reality, like the insects and the bumblebees and all the other insects, you yourself are helpful in pollination, because your movements around and the drafts of air and everything moving around in the atmosphere helps to pollinate. The problem is that heavy pollen makes some people sick.
Right. Well, that's what I was just going to ask you. What are the most common signs and symptoms of allergies, and how do we know if it's allergies versus being sick? Because during allergy season, we all kind of feel a little tired, a little off, you know, raspy throat.
Well, the reason why you're tired, and it's interesting to mention that, is because you're walking through this. So it hits your eyes. You pull it in your nose with breathing. You swallow it, when you eat and drink.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this goes into your system. And your body immediately releases histamine-like substances to counteract that. And histamine makes you drowsy and sleepy,
right,
which is a normal response to that.
Right.
For some folks, that's not enough, so they really hyperreact because the body's trying to flush it out, cough it up, whatever. So you get itchy, burny eyes, runny eyes. You get itchy, burny nose.
It's a lot of energy.
Back to your throat, and you have a lot of energy from all of this. Right, exactly.
A lot of energy expenditure.
Now, Doc, is it possible – for someone to develop allergies who may not have had them, you know, even as a young adult.
That sounds like
go,
I'm getting
there you go.
Sounds like you might have some allergies, Joe.
I know, Joe.
Yeah, no.
Well, wait a minute, Doc. You know, you said histamine makes you tired, but antihistamines such as Benadryl make you very tired, too. So how do you treat this?
Well, the newer antihistamines, the science is better, so they have the non-drowsy ones. And especially the National Transportation and Highway Board has looked at that because a lot of folks who are driving buses and trains and trucks, you know, are on the road and experience this, so they have to be on allergy medicine that does not cause drowsiness. So things have improved in that. The older medications cause drowsiness, but the newer ones are much safer and do not cause drowsiness, especially if you take it at nighttime.
Yeah, like a Claritin. I know, you know, right, don't endorse a specific product, but you know.
Having said that, let me just get back to the question I was asking.
Yeah, keep clearing your throat, Joe. Yeah.
Is it possible to develop allergies if you didn't have them, even as a young adult, as you get older?
You could become allergic to anything, any food, any substance at any time, any medication. And like you said, allergies, yes. Some people get them when they're young, and as they get older, they get better, and then only have it revisit them later on in midlife. Some people who grew up in this area, moved to another part of the country, and are just fine, feel better, and they come back, and their allergies are back, and they're worse than they were before. So we see all of this up and down, reoccurrences, and like you said, changes with the acceptance of these allergies through your lifespan.
Is it possible for them to be more severe? In other words, you know, if somebody has light allergies, could they also become more severe and in some cases even life-threatening?
Well, you bring up a good point.
Of course I brought up a good point, Doc. It's me that brought it up. Go ahead.
Oh, you God. Know,
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Most of them, allergies are what you call life annoyance problems. It's a $1 billion industry to medication.
Right.
And, you know, it's a life annoyance. Very rarely is it life-threatening. For folks who have asthma, and there's a form of asthma, the little old classification is called extrinsic asthma, in which their airways are compromised by inhaling this particulate pollen matter. So they actually get spasm in their airways, they get increased secretions in their airways, and they get compromised with breathing. Because if your breathing's compromised, you're going to feel pretty miserable. So it only affects them, asthmatics more so. Not all, but some asthmatics are worsened this time of the year. And that's potentially not so much life-threatening, but that's more serious.
So, Doc, what would you do if you had somebody with typical seasonal allergy symptoms, watery eyes, sneezing, itchy throat, a little malaise, and they're just not themselves? What would you suggest? Is it, you know, come into the doctor? Is it getting some over-the-counter antihistamines, decongestants? Talk to us a little bit about the evaluation and treatment.
Well, if it's mild and you know it's coming and you have it every year, you know, see your friendly neighborhood community pharmacist, and you can discuss with them or the pharmacy technician, and they can recommend medications for you. Most of them are over the counter. They have tablets, capsules, sprays. The only thing you want to keep in mind, and the pharmacist will help you with that, if you have a thyroid disorder or you have high blood pressure, you should stay away from the decongestants and stimulants.
Oh, boy. I guess I'm in trouble, Doc. I guess I'm in trouble because I take some Sudafed. I have thyroid conditions, so I take some Sudafed. I drink it down with my coffee. Are you saying that's not a good idea?
Well, that's interesting. Sudafed, caffeine in the coffee, and thyroid. I mean, you're very energetic, Marla, so now I know why. But, you know, I mean, it's not a complete no. But I mean,
right.
if your blood pressure is controlled, mm-hmm. if your thyroid's controlled, and you're really in a bad way, you might want to try it. But you have to proceed with caution, taking any type of stimulant or decongestant. And but you know, you're a nurse, you would know what to do. But
right.
For most people, the admonition,
we're the worst patients, though.
If you have hypertension or thyroid disorder, it may be problematic for you. If you don't have your symptoms resolved with the pharmacist and
and over-the-counter treatments, then you probably should see your primary care physician or allergist. Some people need to be allergy tested.
Mm-hmm.
Some people which have significant reactions and require medication may want to look into what they call desensitization or immunotherapy. And that's what you do with the allergy testing. See what you're allergic to. And they can make up a serum batch to do regular injections to help build your own immunity to tolerate these situations with little or no medication.
Doc, before we go, allergy season is from when to when?
Usually it starts the latter part of March through, you know, once all the trees and flowers are out and everything's budded, you know, it starts to wane. It eases up. But it goes from latter part of March through April and May. And then it usually peters out by then.
All right, Doc. Well, as usual, we appreciate the outstanding information. And, of course, we look forward to having you again next week for some more outstanding information. It's Dr. Albert Talone of Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Thank you so much, Doc.
Thanks, Doc.
You're welcome. Have a great day now.
And you as well, pal. Thank you. We'll have Joe Cronin after the break.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years. And you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be. Weinerman Pain and Wellness, on the web at WeinermanPainandWellness.com.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness. From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed, could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
They just told us right away that we're going to house you, we're going to feed you, and every single one of his medical bills is just all taken care of.
They've saved my family from financial ruin. It allowed me and my wife both to focus on the most important thing, which was the health and well-being of our son.
We have phenomenal research, outstanding clinical care, and the generosity of public, which allow us to treat patients regardless of what it takes. And that's what makes St. Jude so magical.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, families never receive a bill for treatment, travel, housing, or food, because the only thing a family should worry about is helping their child live.
Doctors send us the toughest cases to be treated at St. Jude, and our patients come from all over the world.
When we come here, they told me, don't worry, everything's been taken care of.
We could never repay St. Jude for what they've given us.
Because of you.
Gracias a ti.
Because of you.
There is St. Jude.
All right, welcome back to the Pain and Wellness Hour, sponsored by Weinemann Pain and Wellness. I'm Joe Dougherty, and I'm introducing you to my lovely co-host, Mara Vitterella.
Hello, hello.
We're happy to have on the program, for the second time in, I guess, maybe a month, back by popular demand. We are always happy to have Joe Cronin of Cronin Trial Lawyers on the program. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Joe. Pleasure to be here.
We got JC and JD today.
JC and JD.
It is just unbelievable.
What other great human being had the initials JC? He knows. The big guy.
Christ.
Yeah, the big guy. The big guy.
God.
You know, we're not quite at that level, but we're close.
Oh, geez.
I cannot deal.
Yeah, well, I'm really witty, aren't I? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Joe, yeah, obviously we're happy to have you back on the show, and we talk about a lot of things. Let's talk about Cronin Trial Lawyers. Briefly, give our listeners a little bit about the firm.
Okay. We have two offices, one in Philadelphia, one in Cherry Hill. We have several lawyers that work for the firm. We specialize in catastrophic personal injury primarily. We handle cases, anything ranging from wrongful death cases, trucking accidents, sometimes workers' compensation cases come in the door. We handle those. In addition to those, there's a third-party case that arises out of it. For example, someone can get hurt at work, but it's not necessarily the fault of the employer. It's another case that arises out of that. Medical malpractice cases, product liability, wide-ranging variety of cases that we handle both in Pennsylvania and New Jersey.
Now, talking about catastrophic injury cases, what is that? What is the definition of a catastrophic injury case?
Catastrophic injury case, I define, is the one to be where there is substantial, serious, and permanent injuries, usually lasting someone for the rest of their life. It's easier to say what it is not. It's not something where you have a sore ankle or knee for a few months and it resolves with conservative treatment.
Somebody who's been through obviously a serious accident that, you know, potentially may never be the same.
Yeah, requiring one or more surgeries, obviously loss of limb, disfigurement, things like that.
And not every firm does those types of I mean, that's a very serious responsibility.
It's a very serious responsibility, and it's one that requires a huge time and financial commitment. So there's not a lot of firms that do that type of work. They'll usually refer it out to somebody else. That's what we like to specialize in.
You know, at the end of the day, you could actually have a catastrophic injury. So I've seen the categories of personal injuries, and you have your automobile accidents, you slip and fall. But either one of them could actually be a catastrophic injury, correct, if it's a serious enough situation?
That's a great point. You can have a slip and fall that's a catastrophic injury. For example, you can slip and fall and sustain a brain injury. You can become paralyzed. It can happen in a trucking accident. I've seen the results of accidents where you would swear that the person in the automobile hit by the tractor trailer must have died, but yet they got up, they walked away, and never went to a doctor. I've seen other ones where there looked like there's minor damage, and the person was never able to walk again. So any type of accident that occurs can lead to a serious and permanent injury.
Very interesting. I have a friend of mine who I'll never forget this as long as I live. This will blow your mind. Good friend of mine, I was at his wedding like 30 years ago. It was 25, 30 years ago. And he had a friend who was an attorney. And that attorney was in his office, and he went to throw a milk carton in his trash can. Somehow he missed it. He went to pick it up, and he pulled his back out. And this individual ended up having a disc problem. It got worse and worse and worse. Finally, he's had like 8 to 10 surgeries. It never recovered. They call him at the law firm, at the doctors, at the Murphy's Law, because he's had so many issues with it. And it's a rare thing, no question. But I've seen this guy since then, mm-hmm. and he's had such difficulty. Your heart, I was an iron worker for 25 years, and saw situations like it. But like you just said, you're talking about somebody could have a slip and fall, and it could be a minor thing. When we say minor, they could pull their back out and have a disc problem or whatever. But it eventually heals, or somebody could have unbelievable complications.
I see a lot of it, especially in the wintertime, with the ice, like the black ice in the parking lots and things like that. When people actually fall, they bang their head. And they get up, they don't realize that they have an injury, and then days later they start with headaches and just not feeling right, or their balance is off. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you probably see that.
A case that comes to mind is Liam Neeson's wife, Natasha Richardson. She mm-hmm. fell, mm-hmm. banged her head. Mm-hmm. She had minor treatment. Within a day or two, she ended up passing away from a traumatic brain injury. That's an example. There's a case I have going to trial next month. The gentleman fell at work. He was a landscaper. He injured his neck and his ankle. Yeah. After over a year of conservative treatment, he had to undergo a cervical fusion in his neck. Mm-hmm. So we take over the case. We file suit. We're in the middle of it. The gentleman has to have the surgery. He goes forward with it. He then sustains a staph infection, requires a staph infection.
And I believe this is what happened to the lawyer, too.
Correct. Gets worse and worse. They do a debridement surgery. Doesn't get better. He dies. All right? So here is a wrongful death mm-hmm. case that arises out of the fact that he was originally hurt. He had orthopedic injuries, mm-hmm. needed surgery. And as everyone knows, when you sign those informed consent forms before surgery, they all say you can die.
Wow.
In the absence of malpractice.
Wow.
There's an example of the gentleman ended up dying as a result of getting hurt. Mm-hmm. And it was over a year prior to the death.
I have a cousin who he actually passed away at a very young age. He worked for the Philadelphia Public Housing Authority. And he acquired a staph infection on his skin that somehow entered into his spinal column, and he became paralyzed. He had full body paralysis. Basically from the neck down. They couldn't figure out how that happened, et cetera, because it was just such a rare case. He was in a wheelchair, and here's a guy who was just, out and about every day. He was athletic, the whole nine yards. He was only in his early 50s when this happened. The tragedy continues. He was a smoker, and he actually – that's how he died. He died in a fire because he fell asleep or, something caught on fire when he was home alone and he couldn't get out of the house, and he burned to death. Right. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, right. What my family went through on that side. He was, my cousin, we were all very close. He lived in my town, and we heard about this fire in our town, and we go and we find out that this is what, so he had all this suffering, all this, surgeries and things like that to try to regain his functionality.
And the point is, you have, whenever
it's
you
tragic.
Have when you have a situation, there's almost, in other words, you can't just blow it off and say it's going to be okay often and not pay attention to it, because there are a lot of potentially mitigating circumstances that could change things.
Right.
When you have situations like that, what's the first thing you do?
Well, when the accident happens, I urge the person to do what they should do to preserve whatever evidence that there is. Use their cell phone. Take photographs. I mean, it's so underutilized. Even in 2018, you can't believe how many people come in and they forgot to take photos.
Usually, I keep hearing that over and over again, to take the photos. And we have our – this is like a mini computer every day.
Yeah, correct. You know what's funny about that, though? And it's really the point of the show. But a lot of times, and I know this just, and I talk about this, that I got a small little fender bender Whole Foods about mm-hmm. a year and a half ago. My wife doesn't even know about it. Mm-hmm. And I think she's busy right now. I don't know if she's listening, I can talk about it.
Elaine, here we go.
But the truth is, it was a little fender bender. There wasn't even a scratch on. And I remember thinking to myself, just almost going blank for a minute. Mm-hmm. saying, because I'm like, oh my, it's the shock of me. Like, did we just bang each other's car? And the thing was, we ended up doing that, but the lady actually took the camera. I do injury radio and legal radio, and the lady came over and said, I don't think there's anything here, but let's just take pictures. And I'm like, okay, good idea. So I think sometimes, Joe, people go blank when, and you know, let alone, not
you know,
only
you're like that shock factor, the initial, right? Like you don't know what to do first. There's so many things.
And
like,
imagine if they're really hurt and was a serious injury. I mean, I'm assuming you get that blank stare on occasion.
Yeah, I do. So I tell them use the cell phone, take the photos, report the accident, go get medical treatment if you're hurt. I don't mean run right into the emergency room if you don't have to, but if you are seriously hurt, go get medical treatment, at least for nothing else, so that you document it and you have somebody check you out to make sure if you need further treatment.
They
if
don't,
it ends up not being a case later,
mm-hmm.
then fine.
Yeah.
So what?
At least, and yeah. And
you're protected.
My whole thing is, you know, how many times on Facebook do you scroll through? Everybody has their, like, fender benders, all types of stuff, but they probably don't think, they'll do it for Facebook, but they don't think about the legality of a case.
I'll tell you what else they don't think about.
Right.
The insurance defense lawyers and the insurance defense trolls that are scrolling through everybody's social media in order to look for something you might say that's going to be helpful for them later in their case. And mm-hmm. they'll twist anything you say or write in order to help the insurance company.
We talked about that one case that, you know, that you talked in about generally where you spent a lot of money on the case. You're defending the individual for a year or two, whatever, and he gets caught on Facebook. You know,
doing the relay race on the beach, right. Doing the shots, running around. And that actually happened when, you know, I worked for the workers' comp firm. You know, we had a case and the guy was talking about his back and it was like a, you know, he got hurt lifting something at work. So
yeah, there
you know,
are the cases where the plaintiff will get caught for posting something on the social media and where it's just they're dead to rights completely. You know, wrong, and obviously they've exaggerated their case.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, though, that what's on the social media doesn't really tell the whole story. But you're giving a layup to the insurance defense lawyer or the insurance company and giving them ammo that they shouldn't have.
Right.
And also, right now, specifically, because the police don't come to the scene of an average fender bender for the most part. What are there companies or in other words, is there anybody that anybody can call? You know, even if it's calling the attorney and saying, listen, you know, there's been an accident out, you know, on, you know, at Broad and Vine in Philadelphia, for example. Can you get out there and collect the actual evidence? Because there's no one's going to create a police report on the scene.
Well, in Philadelphia, I mean, unfortunately, you should still call the police. You should still wait. I mean, they're responding to major crimes and they may put a low priority on the fender bender, but you still should do it. And that way you have the ability and you can document it. It also could come up later if the other person doesn't have insurance or you want to make a claim against a particular type of funds that are available. You have to make a police report. If you don't, you lose your rights to make a claim. So you got to call the police. You got to document it. What I think you're referring to are private investigators. The lawyer can send a private investigator out there, take photos, document the scene, things like that. But it's not going to be the same thing as a police report.
Right. You know, especially with the timing type of situation. When somebody gets in that type of a situation, you know, also, you know, there's an emotional toll on them. And typically speaking, you know, they could be traumatized. You talk about pain and suffering, and that's a big. Is there emotional pain and suffering?
Emotional damages are sometimes recoverable in a case beyond physical pain and suffering. Depends mm-hmm. on the type of case. Depends on what happened. I try not to overreach on cases. You know, if the emotional damages are there and they're real and they're valid, we certainly advance them. But yes, emotional damages are compensable in Pennsylvania and New Jersey.
All right, we're going to have more with Joe Cronin after the break.
If you're injured and need rehabilitation to fully recover, consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness in Center City, Philadelphia. If you're suffering from a diagnosed disease that is causing you great discomfort, consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. They will provide transportation to and from their Center City office. If you are confused, if you are troubled by your medical challenges, or if you feel hopeless because others have made you feel that way, consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness?
because they are who you expect them to be. Weinerman Pain and Wellness, on the web at WeinermanPainAndWellness.com.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
At any given moment, somewhere in America, a baby is taking a first step, a developmental milestone. But for too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone. They're a miracle. These are the parents of babies who were born prematurely or with birth defects. It's a crisis affecting more than 500,000 babies in the United States each year. You can help them by joining volunteers like you who walk in March for Babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Together, our steps make stronger, healthier babies a reality for thousands of families. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible. Who will you march for?
All right, I've gone through all the tracks, just move through the beats. Do your thing.
All right, everyone, let's hear it for West High's own Brooke Turner, a.k.a. DJ Hook.
Scratching up my first school dance takes confidence. So getting into college, I've got what it takes. Okay, I went through the practice sessions, I slept good, I feel good.
We will now begin the test. Please take out your pencils.
I got this.
We're all good at something. Maybe it's breakdancing or skateboarding or video games. Whatever you're good at, you had the skills to make it happen. And those same skills will help us get to college. Visit knowhowtogo.org to learn what you should be doing right now to prepare for college. Start taking the steps at knowhowtogo.org.
I've got what it takes. So do you.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation, and the Ad Council.
In May of 2000, Dave O'Carnikar skied the full descent of Mount Everest. Every day, somewhere in the world, someone base jumps off a bridge, an antenna, a building, or a mountain peak. At Mavericks, surfers brave 60-foot faces and a punishing rock bottom to ride the world's largest waves. Across suburbia, skateboarders transform curves, stairs, swimming pools, and cement flood basins into Everests of their own making. In the old days, we called these people adventurers. Now, we call them extreme sports enthusiasts. There's a group of people who jump out of helicopters into 30-foot ocean swells, race vehicles through war zones, chase hurricanes, fly through walls of fire, and maneuver zodiacs through flash floods, all in an effort to save lives. We call these people the Air Force Reserve. The Air Force Reserve. Live the extreme.
All right, welcome back to the Pain and Wellness Hour. I'm Joe Dockery with my co-host, Marla Vitero.
Hello, hello. I think you wait for that hello, hello now.
That's right. I don't move. If you don't say hello, hello, I'm just sitting here. That's it.
Check my pulse. Make sure I'm there.
This show will not continue. So we're talking to Joe Cronin of Cronin Trial Lawyers, and we're talking about one of the things, we're talking about, motor vehicle accidents. And let's get a quick checklist, Joe, of what somebody would do just so that they have that information if they get in a car accident.
First thing they should do is report the accident. Have the occurrence documented, all right? Whether you feel like you're injured or not, just document that. Secondly, use your smartphone to take photographs and memorialize whatever the condition is at the scene of the accident. Also, use your smartphone to make notes if there's witnesses there. Get their names. Get their telephone numbers. A lot of times they'll end up in the police report anyway, but you never know. Sometimes police officer, he or she is really busy. They can't get to it. Use your smartphone for that. Next, seek medical treatment if you are injured. If you're not injured, you don't need to seek medical treatment. But if you are, go in and get yourself checked out to at least make sure that it's not more serious than you think it is.
Now, if you call the police and they don't show up, you don't have a police report. What do you do at that point? After you're done, do you go? Should you take a ride over to the nearest police district?
Yeah, you want to go over, and if the, for some reason, and I can't think of one where the police will just say, we're not coming. The most that they'll usually say is, it's going to take a while. We'll, you can wait if you want. And obviously, if it's something that they deem to be a minor accident. So if you tell them no one's injured and you had a fender bender in front,
right,
they're probably going to make you wait for a while. But
which
if it's
I
a major.
It's just so crazy, though. Yeah. Don't you kind of think that's crazy?
I think that's because in a big city like Philadelphia, especially in a.
I get it. I mean, I understand it, but how do you not have enough staffing for it? That's like so scary. Because if you know if it's happening in car accidents, it's happening in other crimes, too.
No, I know. Listen, I can, I'm thinking of one off the top of my head when I was in the nightclub business where, you know, I had to explain the urgency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a big, big supporter of our boys and girls in blue, but that the reality is, you know, so you, sometimes you got to be pretty descriptive and say, listen, we got a problem here. But if they don't come, if they wait there for 3 hours and all of a sudden it becomes obvious that the police are too busy in the district and it was a fender bender and they don't see the urgency, should you go?
Yeah, go to the local, district and make a report there and then also report the accident to your insurance company.
So we're going to segue a little bit here because we only have a couple more minutes, but product liability, you have experience in that particular area. Talk to me a little bit about that, you know, when somebody gets into a situation where there's an injury due to a faulty product or something like that, describe what that means.
That means that if one uses a product that is sold and they are injured as a result of the use of their product or something arising out of the use or operation of the product, then they may have a claim against the product's manufacturer and or seller. All right? There are laws which provide for the fact that a manufacturer or seller of a product can be strictly liable if it's deemed to be defective. The product can also be defectively made. It wasn't made the correct way that it was supposed to have been made, and it can hurt somebody. Or the product in and of itself can be inherently dangerous and cause somebody to become injured. And so sometimes the law is that the manufacturer is strictly liable. Other times they're liable because the product was defectively made.
Now, are those cases, sometimes that can be David against Goliath, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The manufacturers are obviously going to have a lot of insurance available. And when there's a lot of insurance available, there's a lot of insurance defense lawyers that are available.
Now, when you vet a case like that, you know, when somebody comes in, are they typically difficult to prove, number one? And number two, how do you vet a case to see if it's a worthwhile you know, I know that you're incredibly client friendly, but you know, your time is valuable and so is theirs. How do you vet it?
The same way I would do with a medical malpractice case. Both of those cases are extremely expensive to finance and prosecute. So to go from beginning to end, it's not uncommon to spend $50,000 of your own money as the attorney in order to get from point A to point B, mm-hmm. and that's through jury verdict. Could be more. Six figures is not unheard of for a product liability case. So in order to justify that, you have to make sure that the case can afford it is the phrase I would use. If a person is injured and they have an injury that resolved within, say, four, five, 6 months, and they're fine after that, that's probably not a case that's going to be worth it for anybody to file suit on either a basis of medical malpractice or products liability. But you said something that's really important, Joe. It's not just the lawyer's money that we're talking about. It's the time and energy and emotional toll that it puts on the client. You're not doing the client any favors either by bringing them along for this 2-3-4 year ride when there's really not a substantial recovery for them at the end.
There was a case that a young girl, she actually, she was a pitcher on a softball team. And I forget, or I probably shouldn't even say the large brand that manufactures this particular product, but it was one of those, what they call it, the pitchbacks.
The pitchbacks, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there was, they didn't have a little rubber stopper in the pitchback. So when she went to adjust it, her finger actually got chopped off.
Oh, my God.
So for a $2 item that this company should have had in there to protect, you know, I don't know the dynamics of the mechanic, et cetera. But her finger actually went flying across the grass. She had to go to the emergency room and send the father back for the finger because you have to put that on ice to try to retrieve that. She needed a ton of plastic surgery at Children's Hospital. She was only about 8 or 9 years old. And, you know, they were responsible for this. I mean, put it through college and things like that. She lost her finger. They were able to repair it. Cosmetically looked well. But, you know, they didn't know what to do. They left without the finger too. I mean, because they were in such a shock phase.
I mean, it's got to be some of those cases have to be things you would almost never suspect.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, in that type of case, it would. I mean, and that's obviously we don't know the facts of it, but is that something you would take a look at and is that you know and we don't have the details, but does that sound like a case that would be. Something that would be viable.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's like it. Obviously, that's a catastrophic injury. I mean, yes, it's a finger. Yes, they attached it, but that's substantial. Now, let's say she lacerated her finger. She needed 3-4 stitches and then she was fine.
Yeah.
How can you, one, justify spending all the time and money bringing a products liability case on that?
On that, right. Exactly.
Before we segue, the contact information of Cronin Trial Lawyers.
Our Philadelphia office is 215-751-9001. We're located 15th and JFK. And our New Jersey office is right on Route 70, near the intersection of Route 70 and Cuthbert Boulevard. And our number there is 856-368-2600. Website is CroninFirm.com.
All right. Well, Joe Cronin of Cronin Trial Lawyers, you're going to stick with us for the rest of the broadcast, but we talked about a lot of catastrophic injuries at the beginning of the show, and we're going to, you know, this is going to be an amazing segment. We're going to segue, and I'm going to welcome Barbara Rocky, who's the executive director of Philippi's, to the broadcast. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome to you, too.
Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for coming on our show.
So thank you for inviting me.
So I'll kind of make some introductions. Marla Vitarello is my co-host, Barbara. And she's here at the panel. And of course, Joe Cronin of Cronin Trial Lawyers is also here, who will be part of the conversation. And, what we're going to talk about is, first of all, you know, we have a little bit of time because we actually are skipping over the break. If you will, tell everybody what Philippi's is.
Philippi's is a nonprofit. We were founded in 1975, so we're more than 40 years old. And our mission is the prevention of workplace injury, illness, and death. Through advocacy, through political action, through training, through education, and through community engagement in coalition building. We're part of a national network that's sort of called the COSH groups, Committees on Occupational Safety and Health.
And you know, we're talking about either, you know, the prevention of obviously, you know, injuries, catastrophic injuries, and death on in the workplace.
Yes. That's right.
And so what we're going to talk about right now is a major event that you are the primary organizer for that is I go every year, the Workers' Memorial. And if you will, Barbara, tell us what the Workers' Memorial Day event is all about.
It's a date. It's officially April 28th is the date where Worker Memorial Day is recognized throughout the United States and actually now. Throughout the world, it started sort of around the passage of the OSHA Act, and in Philadelphia, and it's co-sponsored between Philippi's and the Philadelphia AFL-CIO. Our program is actually the oldest in the country and the largest in the country, and it's a day that we meet to recognize. The workers who have been killed on the job or died of illnesses during the past year or were traumatically injured, and to recognize the loss their families are suffering from that, and also to recognize that these were all preventable. And so we also talk about the need to strengthen our efforts to make jobs safer and healthier for all workers.
And the saying, and I love this saying, is pray for the dead and fight like hell for the living.
That's right. An old Mother Jones quote. And that's what our program is all about. We have a breakfast program where we have speakers and we talk about different aspects of making workplaces safer. Following that, well, we also, at our event, distribute a fatality list for the tri-state area for Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, reflecting the previous 12 months. And the information includes the age of the person, how they were killed, who they worked for.
Let me just explain that. You know, in other words, let me tell our listeners what that's like. First of all, it's a ceremony. It's something that is one of the most emotional things imaginable. Last year, I told you in our conversation yesterday, being an iron worker, everybody walks up Delaware Avenue with a name, with a placard of the name of somebody who lost their life on the job. And somehow, just unbelievable, I got the name, I got the placard of the iron worker that was, the young iron worker that was killed in New Jersey, I guess 2 years ago, and it was just random. In other words, if that would be the one that I would obviously feel the most affinity with because of being an iron worker, and it was so emotional walking up, and then the ceremony when everybody reads the name of the person whose placard they're carrying, it's just an amazing experience.
I mean there's this breakfast program, and also at the breakfast program, we increasingly every year have more and more families come. We've gotten better. It's hard to find them because we aren't given that information. We aren't even necessarily told if they were in a union, because then you can usually find the family. And most of the workers killed are not in unions.
Right.
And so, last year we had over 60 family members attending, and we have blown up pictures of their loved one to make it personal. So when people are sitting there listening to speakers and at the breakfast, they're looking at a stage where the entire front of the stage is pictures of those that have lost their lives. And at the end of the breakfast, all the families get up holding the picture of their loved one with the babies, with the grandkids.
Oh, my God. That's really emotional.
At the front of the room. And then we all gather outside the hall to begin the procession. The police cordon it off. We have bagpipers at the front. And the families carrying their pictures lead the procession, and everyone follows to Penn's Landing. And when we get to Penn's Landing, we have prayer. Families are invited to speak if they want to there. And then everyone lines up, and they read off the name of the placard representing the person they're representing there who was killed on the job. And we throw a rose into the river for their memory. Last year, we read off 134 names.
I was going to ask you, do we have a number this year?
This year we do not have the final number because, I'll explain that, but it's going to be a little bit less. I would say we may be coming in more like 115 or 120.
But still,
which is still just in 12 months. I don't think people have any understanding of just how huge this number is every year. The problem for us is, like in Pennsylvania, there's still no OSHA rights for public sector workers, and so we can't even get the names, except that all year long we're doing news searches, and if the news doesn't cover the death, if we can't find a little article or a little TV newscast about someone in that little community, we may not even know about it. And the other big missing group in the list are all of those who die years later from exposures, from asbestosis or silicosis or all the different diseases that people get, because that isn't even tracked.
Now, let's talk about the union support for the because I want to get into some, there's a situation like you just mentioned, you're going to have, we'll talk about the guests in a second, but, the Philadelphia Council, AFL-CIO, and the union community, and Pat Iding, the president of the AFL-CIO, are massive supporters of obviously not only Philip Pash, which Philippi is a major part of our labor community, but also this event. Talk about how committed President Iding is in the AFL-CIO.
Oh yeah, and Pat co-chairs the meeting, and I mean he promotes it and supports it. He would never miss it. But the room, you know, is full. The Sheet Metal Workers Hall is full. We get at least 300 people there, and union after union buys tables. Or they make a memorial donation. The memorial donation allows us to bring families, you know, for no charge, you know, to be our guests,
sure.
Honored guests. And so that support, this wouldn't happen. The event wouldn't happen, without that support. And sometimes they also come because they've lost a member that year. And, for instance, the Laborers District Council will be there in force because a member of Local 57 was killed this year.
Mm-hmm.
Another, you know, a member, several carpenters were killed. Again, overwhelmingly, it's non-union workers, but it's labor that really makes this program possible.
Well, and the interesting thing, obviously, you know, Pat is, you know, he supports working people, and he'll say on the radio show on, you know, whether they have a collective bargaining agreement or not. One of the things, you know, at this last year, the governor was one of the primary speakers. So anybody listening should know this is a big time, not only a big time event, but one of the most emotional events that of the year within the labor community. Let's talk about the guests that are going to be attending this year's event.
We have a great lineup of speakers. An elected state representative who's on the Labor Ed Committee and has been a strong supporter of trying to get OSHA passed for public sector workers in Pennsylvania. I mean, it's crazy that if you're a highway worker or you're a school district worker or if you're a, I could just go on and on and on. You work in a state hospital in Pennsylvania. We're one of 20 states that still don't have OSHA for public sector workers, which is unbelievable. And Leanne Kruger-Banke is a newly elected state rep and on the Labor Ed Committee and a very strong supporter of OSHA rights for public sector workers in Pennsylvania. So she's going to be speaking. I mentioned the Laborers District Council will be speaking. And also, I'm really enthused about something that I don't think anyone has been talking about before our program, which is the enormous risks, not only from traumatic injuries, but also from stress and also from illnesses, life-threatening illnesses of people in the news media, the front-line people, the reporters, the cameramen, the sound crew that are covering catastrophic events.
And you told me earlier to talk about the panel of SAG-AFTRA and IBEU leaders that are going to be there.
Right. The leadership of SAG-AFTRA is going to be talking about how they're really looking at this and beginning to address it, you know, to how to eliminate or minimize it. Also, with this is going to be someone who was a cameraman, IBEW president. He's now retired, but he, with you know, hundreds of others, covered Three Mile Island, the nuclear meltdown, where you know all the surrounding communities. There was concern about the contamination, but he's now meeting with a group of former news people, all of whom covered Three Mile Island, all of whom are sick.
Isn't that amazing? You have a big catastrophe at Three Mile Island. It's on the news you're watching, and the individuals that are covering it are actually their health was at risk, and actually there were some major issues there.
Right.
And they're going to be a part of the actual demonstration on the 27th.
Right. And beginning to bring awareness when we're sitting at home watching TV, watching amazing coverage of, you know, explosion, chemical explosions, fires where people are being brought out or whatever. the crew, the camera people, they're right there. Frank was telling me he used to do coverage of asbestos removals where they discover this stuff, and he's taking pictures of people who are suited up and have respirators on, and he's got nothing, but he's right there, you know, getting the story.
I'm going to bring Joe Cronin, who's a trial lawyer, a personal injury lawyer, who does a lot of this type of work. And Joe, we're talking about, you know, individuals. We're talking about reporters that were on the scene of, for example, like the Three Mile Island situation.
Right.
Now, years later, There's a fact, you know, obviously they have effects. There's problems. There's health issues. How do you deal with something like that, you know, from a legal standpoint?
Well, the way you deal with that from a legal standpoint is there obviously statute of limitations is going to sometimes be an issue on cases. Barbara made a good point when she said that a lot of the untold numbers are the people that die or suffer illnesses later on down the road and weren't aware that they had a situation that gave rise to a claim. So that's going to play right into the statute of limitations analysis because that begins to run what a person knew or should have known that they had a potential claim. So the way the attorney should take a look at it is right away assess whether or not the worker has a claim, and if so, when they knew or should have known the claim would have arisen.
And that could actually happen decades later?
Absolutely. Let's say for easy example, mesothelioma is an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Something where years and years later, a man or woman finds out that they have this horrible disease. It's obviously going to be terminal, and they have to take immediate steps in order to preserve their claim and go from there.
Barbara, we got about a minute. This is just an amazing event. And by the way, I want to thank you for what you do every year. Your dedication is unprecedented, and so is your passion. If you will, give everybody the actual details of the where, when, the whole deal.
So it'll be on Friday, April 27th at the Sheet Metal Hall, Local 19 on Columbus Boulevard, just below Washington. It begins at 9 a.m. and the three-part ends about noon. You know, we would be welcome anyone who's interested in joining us. It would be good if you could contact Philiposh or contact the Philadelphia AFL-CIO. Philiposh is just like it sounds, Philiposh. I won't give you the phone number because you won't remember it, but you can look it up and give us a call, or the Philadelphia AFL-CIO, and we would welcome anyone who's interested. I guarantee you it will be an experience that will leave an impact on you for life.
Barbara Rocky, Executive Director of Philiposh, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Absolutely. Fantastic. And listen, it's an impacting event, and it rides right into the catastrophic injuries we were talking about. And they actually, I mean, it's such an emotional thing, you'll never forget it. I want to thank Joe Cronin of Cronin Trial Lawyers for joining us.
Thanks, Joe.
Dr. Albert Talone, as usual, my lovely guest, Marla Vitarello.
Thank you.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, our fantastic sponsor. For everyone, I'm Joe Dougherty. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Joe.
I never needed anybody's help in there.